All right, guys, and welcome to the Let's Talk Tennis podcast. We are on episode 12. I'm here with Marty and Vorsey, and today we have an interesting podcast. We've got no guest this week, so it's just us, guys. And we're going to go around and discuss a couple things each that we wish we had done better or wish we had known while we were playing. We've all had a playing career and then gone into coaching. And it's been a few years now since we were tennis players. And I think we all can agree that we have learned a lot post our playing careers. And there's definitely some things that we wish that we could go back and change. And the idea for this episode will be for anybody who is currently playing or maybe young juniors that are coming up, to learn from the mistakes that we made and to try and maybe avoid or just, as I said, learned from the experiences that we had. So I think what we'll do is we'll just jump straight in. We'll start with me and then Marty will go to you and then Vorsey, and then we'll kind of go around a couple of times. And the idea here is we're just going to kind of say it and then open up for discussion. So I think for the first one for me then is, I really wish that I had spent, especially in my early like junior career, and I definitely felt this in my freshman year of college, that I had spent more time focusing on my side of the net rather than focusing so much on the other side of the net, focusing on my opponent, focusing on who I was playing, you know, what round I was in or how they were going to play, and really just kind of nailed down my game for each individual day, and then started to worry about what they were doing once I'd kind of figured my game out. And I think it was something that I preached a lot to my players once I started coaching, realizing that actually you can't produce your best level unless you've got you down. And then you can be the most effective version of you when you've got you down, and then you can make adaptions to who you're playing. So, boys, what do you think?
I think that's a great point. You know, we get so caught up thinking about, okay, the person we're playing at times, and we forget that, you know, we can only control so much.
Yeah.
You know, so I have to ask you this question. What do you think kept you from focusing on you from the get-go and instead of focusing on the other person? What was the problem there?
I think it's a very common thing in tennis is that you have a big ego, right? As tennis players, we play an individual sport, so we're very selfish in a way, which is not always a bad thing. I think being selfish has actually, you know, benefited a lot of us as athletes, but we worry so much about what people think, the perception of what people think about our games, I think that was the main thing that when I was growing up, it was like, oh, I can't lose to this person, or what people are going to think if I lost this match, or, you know, they've got a big serve and be intimidated by, you know, someone else's game. And I think that if I had spent, especially as a junior, spent more time going, actually, I need to just focus on me, being the best version of me, then, one, I would have been a lot less stressed in matches. And this kind of clicked for me, like the last few years where I really stopped caring who I was playing. I think I did what every junior player does, and they look up every record and every match of who they were playing and try to predict what the score was going to be because they played someone that I've played and whatever. And like, I wish I'd just spent that energy on me and just said, right, well, how can you use that energy that you're spending on your opponent on what you can do better and how you can get better prepared for this?
Right. It seems like you were, from what I understand, you were very focused on in the future.
Yeah.
And not so much in the present of you. We always talk about as coaches, right? Hey, focus. Mm-hmm. It's a process, right? Trust the process. But, you know, be in the moment and focus on what you need to improve and how your game goes.
Yeah.
Would you say that was something that affected you, just being very futuristic?
Yeah. And I think this is something that carried on a long time after my playing career was that, you know, I had a great mentor that put it in perspective for me. And he was like, look, you've got everyone in their life has these three elements, right? It's past, present, and future. The past is the past. There's nothing you can do about it. The future hasn't happened yet. It's a whatever you think the future is a false narrative you've created in your own head, because you don't know. The future hasn't happened. We have no idea what it's going to be. The present is happening right now, and it's the only thing that you can influence or even begin to try and control. So all your energy should be going into the present moment. And ultimately, if you do your best and you produce your best in the present moment, that future becomes a present at some point, and it's going to be better than if you were so much energy was put in this like false thing that you're creating in your head. I think for sure if I'd spent more time just being present and just saying, right, what do I need to do here to win, rather than worrying so much if I was going to win or if I was going to lose. And it's something that, as I said, clicked for me in the last few years of my playing career, but also something I had to control outside of tennis as well. Like in my career, I was so forward thinking and I was always worried about where I was going to be in 5 years' time. And actually, when I just gave it my best every single day and put my energy into that, things started working out better. So, yeah.
That's a good one, Tom. I think that's a good one because I see myself, a lot on that one. Being intimidated maybe by the opponent, by who am I playing or something. But at the same point, at the same time, I think, well, when you're a kid and you're starting 10, 11, 12 years old, and you get thrown up in this court, you know, by yourself, you don't really know what's going on at that moment, or maybe you don't understand what is it. You know what I mean? That you don't understand what is it to feel secure about yourself in front of this other opponent, and sooner or later you learn it, because maybe you learn it through a coach that explains you how to compete and stuff like that, or you learn it later in life, like you said, that at some point you realized, okay, I don't have to worry about this right now. But you know, when you the first years that you start playing tournaments, it's quite common you maybe feel this way, right?
And I think it's a coaching error. I honestly do. I think I made the coaching error at the beginning of my career, and then as I got older, I started to figure it out for myself. I started to coach more like it, that coaches spend so much time, especially at tournaments. I used to go to lots of tournaments and kids would be telling the kids I was coaching, like, you need to play this guy this way and all this. And I was like, hold on a second. You don't change the way you play for your opponent. You can adapt what your game does. Like, you can make small adaptions to like how you're going to approach this, but your game stays the same. Your tennis ID stays the same. If you're serving volley, you serve and volley. You don't stay back and grind, right? And I think as coaches, when the pressure is on for us to get results, we try to go the way of like, okay, how can we beat that individual person? And when I started getting great results with players was when I really focused on how do I develop this person's game to be at a level that's higher than the people that they're wanting to beat right now. And that, again, was something that that's the kind of thing that clicked in my head when I was a player. Where I was like, if I just get so good that I don't have to worry about losing to these players, then that's how I stop focusing on the other side of the net. I just focus on if I can produce the best I can that day, if I win or lose, there's nothing else I could do because I produced the best out of me. And I think that's something, if coaches are listening to this, is like, preach to your players that they have to be the best version of them before they can even start to try and adapt their game. Like the first three games, I always say to players, it's like, focus on you. Don't care what your opponent's doing. Just get you down. Make sure you're doing the fundamentals right. Make sure that you are mentally saying the right things to yourself. Make sure your preparation was good, you know? And then once you've got you down, then you can start to put a little bit of energy into what your opponents are doing. So, yeah. All right. So let's move on. Marty, what's one of the things that you wish that you could go back and change, or that you now realize you would have changed?
Well, I would say I would have liked to, and I was just going to piggyback off what you just said there, having an ID as a player, not just a game style, but also an identity where, you know, I was under this particular coach and I learned to play this particular way and knew that there were other ways, but, you know, I accepted the way that I was being coached. I felt like as a junior, I spent a lot of time, you know, looking at all these players and, okay, I want to play like him now. Oh, no, but now I like this player. I want to play like him. You know, during the Andy Roddick era, then you had the Roger, yeah, right? And then you had other players up and coming. You know, you say, okay, which is the best way to play? So, you know, I wish I would have had someone tell me from the beginning, hey, this is what you do well. Like, you have a good forehand, a decent forehand. Your backhand is not as strong. Your serve is pretty good. And, you know, physically, you can hang in there. Let's build your game around that.
Yeah. And,
you know, I feel like no one ever told me that. And, you know, also I hold myself accountable because, you know, I could have, you know, just done a little bit better job of thinking and knowing what I was best at. You know, what do you guys think on that spectrum?
I think that's such a vital thing for young players. Like, I term the tennis, the phrase tennis ID, and that's something that I've used for years. And it's because I started to realize, like, if you allow players to express themselves through their game, they play better. They come up with the goods at the right time. They tend to back themselves more. Like, if I have players where I was telling them, and you see again a lot of coaching areas where coaches just try and get all their players to play the same way. And it's just that that's just not possible, because everybody's genetically made up differently. Everybody has different personalities. And I think tennis as a sport is very expressive. Like, it's very, a very emotional sport, and it's a very physical sport. And so the way that you express yourself on the court, the way that you do things on a court, I think directly results from your personality and how you feel about the sport. And so if you don't allow players to grow that themselves, and you're just kind of there to steer them keep them on a stable path, keep within the guidelines, then I think you're going to have players that will consistently doubt themselves big moments. And I'm sure you guys have seen it. I've coached players where they've been told they've been told that they've got to play a certain way. And as soon as they get tight, they go back to the way they want to play. And so you can't coach it out of them. When their backs are against the wall, they're going to go to what they feel comfortable with. So my philosophy with coaching was try to develop that the best that you can. Try to either get them to really understand why they've got to make the change and make it click in their head so they fully trust it, or use what they really love to do and make it the best and most effective way possible.
That's a great way to put it. You know, what I would say, just add to that for whoever's hearing this, if you're a player that, you know, is having troubles right now with your identity, ask questions to your coaches. Tell them, hey, what do I do well? What don't I do well? What do you think I should do? And they'll tell you. Now, if you have a coach that talks to you a lot and tells you what your identity is, listen to them. There's probably someone there on that court with you that has much more experience and has been there and done it. So you definitely need to keep your ears open and your mind, you know, open, so that you can absorb all this information and put it to work.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And I think it goes the other way as well, is like, talk to your coaches, express the way you feel about your game to your coaches. Like, coaches need to listen to their players. Like, it's not a dictatorship when you're coaching players, especially to a high level. You have to listen to the player. You have to listen to how they feel. And also as well, you've got to have an element of what you enjoy in your game. If you don't enjoy playing a certain way, you're not going to dig deep enough to get to a certain level. You're not going to put the time on the court to do it. So for me, I was always like, there were some players that I coached where I'm like, if I could just get them to convince them to play this certain way, I think they'd be so much better. But the battle would be is like, do I spend all this time trying to convince them to do something they don't want to do? Or do I go with them and try to make that the best possible? Because we've only got a certain amount of time. And sometimes I just said, you know what? I'm going to go with what they want to do because they enjoy doing it. And I'm going to try and make that the most efficient and effective way possible, because I know ultimately that's going to be better on the long run for them, because they're probably going to dig deeper and do things with the sport that they potentially wouldn't do if they were trying to do it the way that I thought. Because I don't think as a coach, I had the right to tell them how to do it. My job was to help them figure out the best way to do it for them. It's their game. It's not my game. Like, my game was done at 23. When I became a coach, it was, all right, this is your thing. This is your game. I'm here to help. And that was my philosophy on it. Whether it's right or wrong, who knows? But Vols, what do you think?
Yeah, for sure. It's for sure so important to have that figure when you're young, that don't only tell you what your style is, but challenge you to question yourself what your style should be for you, you know? Definitely, yeah, like I said, a key figure to have, and probably something that I felt maybe that I had it a bit later, that figure that tell me, okay, this is how you're going to have to play a little bit more. But definitely I agree on that point.
Yeah. And again, like Rafa's a great example, right? It's like the forehand, like no one had ever seen the forehand like that. And he didn't grow up playing like that. And then when he hit the tour and the ball was a lot heavier and he was, you know, coming up and, you know, hyperextending around, and you know, all of a sudden he liked it. And I watched an interview of him and Antonio Nadal, and they were like, they talked about it to each other. And so many coaches would have tried to coach that out of him, but it's become one of the best forehands ever, you know? So I think it's a valuable thing for people to have good communication between player and coach and develop a game between you, you know? Cool. Vols, give me one of yours.
Well, yeah, one of mine for sure. Something I regret that I would change right now if I was a junior player again. Something I struggled a lot was my daily effort I put into practice. I was very up and down, so I was not like the type of player that in practice I was always at 10. This guy is like incredible effort. Like I enjoy practice, but there were days that I was a bit sloppy, you know, and. I think that didn't help me when I had to compete, because many times I was nervous or I didn't know how to solve a situation in the match. And because I got tight, I think that related a lot on how I practice, because I maybe didn't put enough repetition on that specific, my playing style. Yeah. So I suffer from it, I think, and for sure I will change my daily effort.
Mm-hmm. What would you say was the cause for you not to be 100% in practice every day? You think it was a mental thing, emotional, you didn't enjoy it? What do you think?
I think it was more the fact that, and I realized that later, especially when I went to America, I think it was that I didn't really enjoy the repetition part of things. I really liked just play points and compete. And sometimes when I had to really put those reps in, I didn't enjoy it that much. But by the years, you know, when the years went by, I actually enjoyed it more, especially in the States. I enjoyed a lot of the practices in the States, and I felt I improved a lot because I was enjoying more the practices. So I think it was the mental aspect of, okay, I have to, you know, put some reps in now and just stick to that. Yeah, I was not good at that.
Yeah, I think there's two points there. The first one is like the enjoying the repetition. Like, I don't know any young players really enjoy like hitting 50 cross court, then hitting 50 cross court again and doing volley. Like, tennis is a very like mundane sport at times to practice, because you have to do repetition to get good. You have to repeat the process over and over and over again, right? But I think, again, it comes down to the communication with the coaches and the players, where you, as a coach, his parents used to be like, why doesn't he try a practice? And I used to own it. I used to be like, look, because I haven't got through yet. Like, I can't expect a young player to understand what we understand as, you know, 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds or 40-year-olds, right? These players don't get that. They haven't got the hindsight that we have. So I think, again, a big responsibility for coaches and for parents is to try to educate the child, so the child understands that, hey, look, this is what is required if I'm going to get to this level. Like, and I think what happened for you, Vols, is when you saw the way it was done at college and you saw these players from all different places around the world, and you saw that probably that they were doing the same thing and they were bought into that, and you started buying into it as a team environment, that's when you started to enjoy it, because you started to see the improvement, you started to see your game go up. And then all of a sudden it's easy to convince someone once they start seeing it work, right? And so yeah, I think that's the big thing. And then and it's a It's a difficult one, right? Where, again, like I do this with kids, okay? So sometimes I have it where, especially now that I'm mentoring, I'm just talking through either Zoom or, you know, FaceTime. And I've got, you know, I'm getting reports from the coaches and saying, you know, he's kind of screwing around at practice or she's not doing this or whatever. And then my job is to go in and try and get through to them, right? And the easiest way I can do this, where I've got players that, like, they don't show up to practice every day. They, even when they do show up, they're not putting the effort in. And then some days they'd be amazing, right? And we all know those kind of players. I simply just ask them, like, simple questions, like, how many times a week are you playing? Okay, how many times a month are you playing? How many times a week are you playing? How many hours are you playing? And then I work out their hours for the week, for the month, and for the year, okay? And so they get a total number of hours that they're going to be playing. And then I've even broken it down to the amount of minutes that they're probably going to be playing for the year. And then I say, right, well, if you take away 10 minutes from every session that you're screwing around in, here's X amount of minutes and hours and potential practices that you're missing out on that your opponents aren't. And that kind of hits home with a lot of them, where they're like, oh, 10 minutes every practice screwing around doesn't seem like it's a lot. But when you stack them up on top of each other, it makes a big deal. If you're then having whole practices where you're just not showing up or you're not putting it in, that shows like potentially months that you're missing out in a year that your opponents aren't. And so if you think for a second that you're going to be able to compete against your opponents when you're not practicing anywhere near as much as them because you're missing this time. And I had a really good coach once tell me, he didn't even coach me. It was something that he was talking to me about. And I was doing a training camp and he was like, just imagine all your opponents are watching every single practice and they're hoping that you don't work hard. They're hoping that you screw around, right? And so in my head from a young age, I was just like, yeah. And I used to visualize that my opponents, the guys that I wanted to beat, were watching my practices. And that when I stopped working hard, they would be like, yes, he's not working hard. That's time that I'm going to have over him. And, you know, and it's just like, again, I think the influence that I had with certain people helped me with that for sure. So and I think if anyone listening, we're all human. So you're not going to be able to maximize every single minute. But it's a good thing to look at is if you look at how much you're playing on a weekly and monthly and yearly basis, and you start subtracting time, it adds up and it gets kind of
scary. This point is so important because I think any player would love to have, again, no, going back to that coach that is giving you, trying to put in that mindset in you. I think it's, you know, a person that any young player would like to have, even though you don't know you need that person.
Yeah.
Now that we are, you know, coaches and not players anymore, for sure, I would love to have that person that is trying to buy me in and to believe that into that type of mindset.
Right, definitely. No, I agree with that 100%. That's a great tool you use there to, you know, create awareness in a kid's mind. And just piggybacking on what Joanne just said, you know, I think a coach that is selfless is definitely going to be more helpful than a coach that, you know, knows a ton about tennis, but, you know, really doesn't care about the player itself. So,
yeah,
I mean, find yourself a selfless coach, definitely going to help you.
Yeah, that's a great point, Marty. And I think, like, going back to my original point where I was saying that as a player, I need to spend more time on my side of net. As a coach, I think I got that right, where I looked at it and I said, now everything as a coach is on the other side of net. Now that it doesn't matter about my game. It doesn't matter about what people think of me if my players win. My whole existence now is devoted to helping their side of the net and making sure that they get everything they need. And I think the coaches that do that well, that don't worry, but when you're hitting with a player, you're not worried about how your forehand is. You're only worried about your forehand just to make sure that you've got a consistent ball for them. But you see a lot of coaches with egos still, right? And they don't want to lose their players. And I was like, the day my players beat me, it means I'm doing a good job, you know? Like, I want my players to be better than me, you know? So we'll go for round two. I'm not sure how much time we have left, so we'll just go as far as we can. My second one that I really wish that I, now that I can step back and look at my career, I wish that I had disconnected my self-worth from my tennis game. And what I mean by that is, like, I was Tom that played tennis. But for pretty much my whole life, 23 years of my life, I saw myself as Tom the tennis player. And so I put a lot of pressure on myself to perform, to hold that appearance that I was a good tennis player. So when I lost, it hit me hard. It hit my self-worth a lot. I beat myself up a lot. When I wasn't playing well, it affected my mood on and off the court. And I think looking back at it, and to any young player, it's like, tennis is a big part of your life if you're a tennis player. It consumes a lot of your life, but it's not everything. And it's not who you are. It's just something that you do. And I think it makes tennis so much more fun if you can have a bad day at practice and you can walk off and you can go, ah, do you know what? Like, yeah, I'll leave that there. I'll leave that at the court today. I'm going to go hang out with my mates. You know, I'm going to go hang out with my family, or I'm going to go and do this or do that. And it's not, you're dragging all this excess baggage, because eventually it shows on the court. If you're constantly carrying this thing around, it's your game and you're so protective over it, and it takes beatings every now and again, and it's difficult. So yeah, that would be my second thing.
I think that's a great one, and I'm sure we've all seen players, and we've all coached players that have had those kind of symptoms as well, that, you know, they just get self-consumed in their own game and forget that life is so much more than tennis. So Tom, what would you tell a player that has these problems, that says holds on to a loss for a week, or you know, is just, you know, gets burned out occasionally just because it's just too much tennis and doesn't perform well on court? What advice would you give them to avoid falling in this problem, and, you know, being able to just make tennis a part of their life?
There's two things that I do as well. First thing is I talk to the whole family, because I think a lot of it stems, and this wasn't actually the case for me, because my family, none of them played tennis. They didn't have an ego about me being good at tennis. Like, they just wanted me to excel in what I was doing. But I see a lot of families, they almost like the kid becomes this little mini athlete that lives in their home. And it's like, you've got to, when I talk to the family, I'm like, look, treat him as your son or your daughter, right? And don't talk to them about tennis when they're at home having their dinner. Like, don't when you're out doing something as a family, don't talk about tennis. That's something that he does or she does when they're at the tennis courts, right? Talk to them about it then, or on the way home, on the way there, but separate the two. And the second thing, when I actually talk to players about it, I'm like, I want you to spend some time thinking about your life and what it would look like if tennis was taken away tomorrow. And what things do you enjoy doing outside of tennis? And then I want you to spend more time in the next couple of weeks doing those things. I had a great player that I worked with in Atlanta, and I really, really enjoy playing, coaching him. And we traveled a lot together, just me and him. And we spent a lot of time talking about this kind of stuff. And I banned him and his family from talking about tennis when they got home. He wasn't allowed to watch tennis at home at all. He wasn't, his mom and dad weren't allowed to talk about tennis to him unless they were in an environment of tennis, because it was just consuming their whole lives. And it was like, it wasn't even just the kid that was suffering. It was the parents as well, because they have a life, you know, and they had another kid. And it was just like one of those things where it's like tennis can suck you in and can really just like, can take you for a ride. And it's like, I think if you can get good at just going, okay, all right, I'm Tom, I play tennis, but I also enjoy doing this. I also enjoy doing this. I also spend more time doing that. Your game will actually improve. I guarantee it. You will actually see improvements in your tennis game when you do other things that that you enjoy, because you'll put less pressure on the tennis. And we all know, if the days that we don't feel pressure, we tend to perform better. And as a tennis players, we're always trying to minimize the pressure that we put on ourselves. So if you can do that by not, your whole identity isn't you as a tennis player, I think it's only going to be good for your game.
Awesome. Great stuff. I think, you know, it just comes down to that, to overthinking it at some point. You're just thinking about it so much, and the same thing happens on the court when you're playing. You overthink it, you get tight, or, you know, you just get frustrated.
Absolutely.
That's a great point.
All right, Marty, we've got 10 minutes left, so we'll try and get through the next couple. Marty, what's your second one? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to make it quick, but I think it's a very powerful tool that, you know, I learned it at an older age, especially through college and doing my master's, is, you know, networking and talking to people and, you know, learning what the best are doing. You know, sometimes we get caught up in this whole competition of, I'm not going to talk to them because they're in my same bracket in the tournament. No.
Yeah.
Go out, open yourself, introduce yourself to people, talk to them, ask them, ask the best what they are doing. Yeah. They'll share with you. Like Tom said, tennis players, we have a big ego. Coaches have a big ego. You ask them a question, they'll share it with you without a doubt. And, you know, so that would have definitely helped me asking more questions around so that I could, you know, maybe find myself, find my identity back to my problem, my first problem. So yeah. That's, what do you guys think about that?
I think it's a fantastic point. And I would love to get Volsey's opinion on this one in a second as well, because you've worked in big academy settings. There's two things. One is that this is why I love academy settings. And I really discourage players from just doing like individuals and just spending a lot of time on the court by themselves. You need to be in that environment where you've got lots of players around you, because you learn. I learned so much growing up from other players, not just from coaches, and watching tennis. And a big thing that I always used to tell my players is, like, if you don't make the final, watch the final. Right? It's because if you're losing and you're going home, how on earth are you going to understand what you're going to need to do to win that tournament if you don't watch the players that are actually going to win that tournament? How do you know where the bar's at? How do you know what these players are doing that you're not right now in order for you to be where they are? And so, like, a lot of players, like, you don't see players sticking around to watch the tournament. I used to always watch the finals when I was younger. It's just because I was fascinated. Tennis fascinated me, and I loved watching other players, and I felt like I just learned so much from them. But a lot of time, parents would be like, right, okay, little Johnny, you lost. We're going to get in the car and go home. And I was like, it's more valuable for you to spend an extra day there and actually watch the final than actually go and pay for a private lesson with your coach. Because most likely, unless you've got a travel coach or someone like me that was traveling over the place, they're not there watching it. So they don't know what the best are doing. But you've got it right there in front of you. All you've got to do is stay and sit and watch, you know, and then take notes and analyze it. And I don't care if they're not the best players in the world. They're the best players in that tournament at that moment. So you better be watching them, you know?
Right. That's a great point.
Ballsy, what do you think about that?
Sorry, what was the question, man? Sorry.
What do you think about the... Because you were obviously in academy settings. You've done a lot of traveling as a coach as well. Like, have you seen that help players? The, you know, that connection part, that players talking to each other or watching
them? Yeah, man. That's a good one too, because I mean, there's a little bit of everything, right? In terms of the personality of each player. But yeah, for sure, I have told players in the past, okay, this player that you're playing against tomorrow or that you lost today is playing again on court 14. Probably will be good to watch him. Yeah, but there's any type of, you can see who's really into it in learning and taking the game, his game or her game, to the next level, and who's not, you know. And for sure, when you go to a tournament, it's like Martin said, you know, tennis players tend to be very selfish and not open up a lot among the other players in the draw. Mm-hmm. And they kind of create these little groups among them and not with the whole environment. For sure, they know each other, but yeah, so it's good to see sometimes a bit more of, you know, being open and sharing others. Yeah.
Do you know what as well is that I think teaching kids how to ask coach questions, I think we've talked about this before, but like I spend a lot of time, especially now that I'm doing mentoring online, it's like teaching kids how to ask coach questions. Because if you ask a coach the right way, you're going to get some great information. If you ask them the wrong way, you're going to get some very basic information. And I will go as far as this. I've had some great coaches. And really respect the coaches that I worked with. Some of the best advice I've ever been given are coaches that have never worked with me, because I've just been at tournaments and I've asked questions. Some of the best advice I got were from coaches when I was a coach, and I was asking coaches, other coaches when I was at tournaments, questions. And again, like, coaches love to talk. And so as young players, tap into that, you know? All right, Ballsy, last one for you. We've timed this kind of perfect. So what's your last one?
Yeah, my last one, it doesn't have to be anything about my game, but it's more about I regret not being grateful to my parents, my family in general, for all the support that they gave me, because I remember I tend to be to get really, I was a mad player on court many times with a lot of anger and emotions, and the way I try to express my anger is by, you know, throwing the racket. So my racket was flying all over the place sometimes, and for sure I am ashamed of that and I regret it, and you know, after the years pass,
yeah,
you think like what an idiot I was. I know how hard it is to get all those things and all this material. Why the hell I was doing that, you know? At that point I know why I was doing. I was so angry, I didn't know how to release that anger, and I did it with the first thing I could have in my hand, you know. So yeah, for sure,
100%.
For sure that one.
I used to do classroom sessions at the academy, and this is one of the frequent classroom sessions I would do, is where I would break it down to the nearest dollar how much it costs for parents to take players to tournaments, how much it was costing them per year for them to be playing at the academy, and just be like, imagine if I gave you that money and then I took it away from you and someone else was playing tennis for it, and then you acted like an idiot, and that money now has just gone down the drain because that person's acted like an idiot, you know. And it's, and just making those kids aware, I think, as well. I agree with you on this one. Like, I really wish I'd been more appreciative of the opportunities we were given in college as well. Like,
for sure,
I mean, like, anyone who's playing college tennis right now, do not for a second take it for granted, because you are getting the best experience possible. You're getting free stuff, nice free stuff. You're probably you're traveling for free. You've got a great environment with teams and whatever. Like, appreciate what you're being given, because there are so many players that don't get the opportunity to go and experience that. And if you're one of the lucky ones, and you may think, oh, but there's loads of players playing, but there's more players not, right? And so I think if you are playing college tennis right now, like, I can remember being like, the whole team got Nike shoes, and I was like, I'm not wearing Nike shoes. I want Adidas shoes. And like, who was that? Who was I to tell the coach that I, but they got it for me. That, no questions asked. And it was like, you know, and I just wish I'd been, in my head, I'm like, yeah, well, I'm winning at the moment, so I deserve to have the Adidas shoes. And it's like, no, you don't. Just shut up and appreciate the fact that you're even getting shoes, because you've got no money in your bank account. So they said to turn around and said, you've got to buy your own shoes. I was like, dad, you know? And then,
yeah,
and then
sure, it's a big one. Yeah.
And again, I think, you know, we'd all agree, I'm extremely thankful for my parents for everything they've done, and financially, but we are running out of time, but guys, I really enjoyed that one. I think it was a good insight. We're going to do one for the coaching side of things. So watch out for that one, guys. But again, just to say, for anyone who is listening, who does listen to us, we do appreciate it. If you have any feedback for us, let us know. Other than that, we'll see you in the next episode. See you, boys.
See you. Peace. See you, boys.
See you.